Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to this first Friday of Lent edition of Catholic Answers Live. Our topic this hour, leadership in the church. The Lord calls us to engage in the missionary work of the church, sharing the good news, whether through our own lives or through our own lives, but also through the ministries the church provides. And like any other organization, the church needs the skills of leadership to be effective in its mission. Maybe you've struggled with leadership in your ministry, your parish, your corner of the Catholic world. Well, what if one of the world's leading experts on leadership had turned his attention to the Catholic world and offered his assistance there? That's exactly what has happened today. I am your host, Cy Kellett. Our number, 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. We invite you to call if you have questions about leadership in the church. Our guest this hour is Patrick Lencioni, and many of you will know him from his many business books, The Advantage, Death by Meeting, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and that one, among others, I think, has made the New York Times, The Business Week, Wall Street Journal, USA Today bestseller lists. He's also now the author of a leadership book for pastors called The Better Pastor. Pat is the founder and president of The Table Group, a specialized management consulting firm focused on executive team development and organizational health. Patrick Lencioni, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
It's great to be on here. I'm a big fan of the show. I listen frequently, and so it's an honor.
So do you think that we in the Catholic world make the same mistakes, or do we have our own set of mistakes that we make when it comes to leadership?
Well, I think we have organizations, we make the same mistakes, but there's a few that are particularly problematic in the Catholic world, maybe also just the Christian world in church-related organizations.
And what might those be? What might the particular temptations or failures that we have in leadership might be?
I think the biggest one is the inability to engage in healthy conflict.
Oh.
And another one that goes with that, it's different, and it's to hold one another accountable for our behaviors.
Well, now I'm curious about healthy conflict, because I do think there are many people who will think conflict isn't healthy. It's unhealthy. So how do we think about healthy conflict, and why is that a tool for us in the church, just like it is anywhere else in the world?
Well, first of all, when I talk about conflict, I'm not talking about mean-spirited back-channel conflict or hurtful conflict. I'm talking about productive, what I call issue-oriented or ideological conflict around an idea. To do that, though, we have to trust one another first. So we have to be vulnerable to one another first. And though I didn't start my career understanding the biblical roots to what I was doing, even though I'm a lifelong Catholic, I've come to learn that, well, all wisdom is rooted in the Bible. First of all, Jesus told us what we need to know. And we have to be vulnerable to one another if we're going to trust one another. And that has to happen first. So when we work with an organization, and we do this with pastors and their teams, I had a pastor here in my office just last week with his team, we teach them to be open and honest and vulnerable with one another. And that is what allows them to have great conflict. If two people don't have vulnerability, conflict is going to be a contest to see who wins.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I mean, frankly, having been married almost 22 years now, I can see that in our married life even, or our family life, on those occasions where we're really just loaded up for bear, kind of, it's, and it becomes a contest of wills. Not much comes from that. It almost always has to get to the point where the shields come down for
Absolutely.
Us to make progress.
And conflict actually makes – you remember, Cy, the first time you had a fight with your wife, you thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're arguing. Is this – and it took you a while to get over it. And now you can cycle through those very quickly because you trust one another. You know you love one another.
Right.
And it's all about solving a problem because there's that trust. And so when we work with a pastor and his team or any business, any leader, we say you have to get to that place where with your team, those four or five or six people that you work with on a regular basis, you can be vulnerable so that when you do engage in conflict, you know it's trying to find the truth or the best possible answer, not trying to hurt one another.
And but that vulnerability can be – I wonder if we're I don't know. It puts us at risk. It's an enormous risk when we make ourselves vulnerable. How do you convince people that the risk is worth it?
Well, what I explain to them is the only thing worse than doing that is not doing it, because then you're protecting yourself and it's awkward and you never get to that level of trust. Now, for a priest, it's particularly hard because there are spiritual leaders and our pastors, and I have so much love and respect for priests and their authority. But when it comes to working to run the parish, to be leaders with their team, not with the random parishioner or just anybody else, but with their team, they have to get to that place of vulnerability. And most priests are so hungry to do that. They want these human relationships. And until you tee it up for them and realize and help them realize it's okay, that they're not violating their role as a pastor, they don't do that. So when they do get to that place, then they can engage in conflict. And the problem there is convincing lay people that it's okay to disagree with their pastor.
Oh, I feel like that. I already know that. No, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Our topic today on Catholic Answers Live, leadership in the church. And we have one of the world's experts on leadership. And we're really fortunate to have Pat Lencioni with us, because in the business world, in the sports world, he's well known for his skills teaching leadership and helping people master the skills of leadership. But he really, as a Catholic, has turned his attention to our corner of the world, our Catholic part of the world, and is ready and willing to help us. Now, you said there was the other thing, temptation, or the other problem, leadership problem we tend to have. The first is that we were just talking about that inability to be vulnerable, to have creative conflict. The second one was?
Is to hold each other accountable.
Okay, now what would that look like? Say in a parish, what would that look like?
That would look like a person who works at the front desk of a parish who's not very friendly. And ask the average pastor or the average employee if they want to really have that conversation, like, you're not doing – or your DRE or your person in charge of liturgy or God forbid the music, to have to sit down and say, you know something, you need to get better at this. This is too important for us to not be good at it, and I need you to get better, or maybe we're going to have to do something else. Now, people think, well, we work in a church, so we're supposed to be nice to one another. And as though Jesus said, you know, the command was to be nice to one another as I have been nice to you. But it's to love one another, and sometimes love requires toughness to help someone get better. And we, as people that work in churches, have to realize that confronting people about behavioral change is a sign of love, even if they dislike you for it for a while. Even if they're not happy about it, if you love someone enough, you have to tell them the kind truth. We've sacrificed truth. And kindness without truth is not good, because you're affirming people in something that's not good for them.
And why do you say that these are – there are other problems that organizations have. What in your experience – why do you say that these are the particular ones that we Christians have? Are we maybe afraid of conflict? Because these sound like conflict ones, that we're afraid of conflict because we don't think Jesus would behave that way, or we think we're, you know, blessed are the meek and that kind of thing. Or
I think that's part of it. First, let me explain the difference between conflict and accountability. They're related, because conflict is when you just say, hey, I think we should sing this song at Easter Mass this year. And somebody says, you know, I think that song's hard to sing. I like that song. Yeah, but I think it's in the wrong key. That's disagreement around an issue.
Okay.
And I used an easy one. But accountability is when you have to confront somebody about themselves. Like, I think that you could be more warm, kind, and giving outreach to people that come into the office instead of just handing them a form and dismissing them. I think that you need to be more organized when you prepare a Bible study. That's actually telling someone personally that they have to do something different, which is even harder than disagreeing with them around an idea. And I think the reason why we have a hard time as Christians is because we've too often painted Jesus as a sandal-wearing guy that sings Kumbaya and plays the guitar. He was quite a dude. You know, I mean, he held people accountable and loved them enough to right. say to them, you've got to do this better. And I think that for a lot of men in particular, they've never been presented with Jesus, the strong man that he is.
Yeah.
'Cause I know I grew up in the 60s, 70s and early 80s. And you know, it was like puppy dogs and rainbows. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I thought Jesus was one cool, awesome, strong man. And I think that if we don't think he's that way, then we would never want to do something that seemed less than soft. Now, that's not a refusal of meekness. We have to be kind. We have to be loving. But right. We have to tell people the truth for their benefit. So that I just went off a little bit there, but that's kind of how I feel.
No, yeah, that was very, very helpful. And you actually see the God the Father, I mean, throughout the Jewish scriptures and the Christian scriptures is admonishing people and correcting people. But it always does seem to come back to that loving Father. He never just leaves it there as, oh, you messed up and now you're out of my good graces. That's exactly the opposite of the way God functions.
Right. But a couple of weeks ago at Mass, I don't know if it was from the book of Sirach or where it comes in the Old Testament, they said, God will correct you, and that is how you know he loves you.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's before we go to the break, and then we'll get to calls. And 888-318-7884 is the number. Patrick Lencioni is our guest, a world expert in leadership, here to talk with us about leadership in the church. Patrick is a Catholic himself and sharing his skills with us in the Catholic world. But here's my thing about holding people to account. And I just want to say this in a particularly Catholic, and this may happen in Protestant churches as well or synagogues, I don't know. But the thing where Father gives the homily and celebrates Mass, and then I sometimes get the feeling that all people want to do is correct Father. And, he waits for you after church to greet you and all that and say, and that, well, Father, you shouldn't have said this. Father, you shouldn't have said that. And I think sometimes maybe that's not the right setting. I don't know if maybe as a leadership leader or as someone who knows how to do these things, is that the right setting? And maybe there's another way to talk to Father if you don't agree with what he said or something like that?
Yeah, that's definitely not the right setting.
Okay.
But the advice I would give – but you're going to have people in parishes that do that. And here's the thing, Cy, and this is what I tell priests and pastors and all leaders, but it's particularly important for a pastor. I really believe this. There's this thing called the law of thirds, which says you can break your parish down into three kinds of people, your parishioners. On the right side, think of the flag of France, like three slivers. The right side are the supporters. They're like, Father, whatever you need us to do for the church, we're there for you. We know that you're trying to do the right thing. Let us know how we can help. We'll do that. In the middle is the undecided. They're like, I don't know what to do. I think I support Father, but I'm not sure. And on the left is this small group of people that looks a lot bigger than it is. And they're the ones that stop him outside of Mass.
Yeah.
And these are the naysayers. These are the people, no matter what he does, they're going to say, Father, this is not good. The food wasn't good. You shouldn't do donuts or two, whatever else. But the problem is those people on the left are always there. They're always talking to the priest after Mass. They're always going up and complaining. And a well-meaning priest will often try to win them over. And when he does that, all he's doing is giving them oxygen and encouraging the people in the middle, the undecideds, to act like them, because that's how they get his attention. And eventually the supporters get so tired, some of them start to complain and the other ones just check out. What a pastor has to do, and any leader, is he has to really gear his leadership toward the supporters. Not in a mean way to ignore the others, but just not to give them oxygen, because you can never win over the naysayers. Eventually, the undecideds become supporters, and half the naysayers get so tired of being a naysayer that they become a supporter. And you know what that other sliver does? They leave.
Ah.
And here's the thing. A pastor has to be okay with a few people in his parish who love to complain. When they don't get enough attention, they're going to seek out another parish where the pastor is going to give them that attention. There is nothing unchristian about allowing them to select out. But if we try to win over the naysayers, if we're constantly worried about pleasing those same five people who are always complaining, we are going to make our churches mediocre.
Wow. 888-318-7884 is the number. We got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Patrick Lencioni, one of the world's leaders in organization and leadership, the author of, among many other things, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, a New York Times and other lists bestseller. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We hear it every year, the perennial question, what are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? If you don't have a daily time for reading the Bible, we recommend you make one. And to help you with those difficult passages, we also recommend a daily dose of Trent Horn's latest book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Bible Difficulties. Hard Sayings is the perfect book for your Lenten journey. Trent looks at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offers clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning, deepening your understanding of God's holy word. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 9:14, the disciples of John the Baptist asked Jesus why his disciples did not fast, while they and the Pharisees did. Jesus responded that the wedding guests could not mourn while the bridegroom was still with them, but that the day would come when he would be taken away, and then they would fast. Jesus obviously associates wedding festivities with joy and not sorrow, as in the case of fasting. The time did come for his disciples to fast, and it continues to this day. We fast in reparation for our infidelity toward him, considering all that he endured for us. Fasting is a way of asserting our convictions that gives credibility to our words before others, but most importantly, it does so to ourselves. After all, fasting is a form of sacrifice, and sacrifice is the measure of love. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Patrick Lencioni, our guest this hour, our topic, leadership in the church. Our number, 888-318-7884. That's 888-318-7884. And Pat, if it's all right with you, we'll go straight to the phones.
Be great.
John in Wilmington, North Carolina, listening on Wilmington Catholic Radio, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. What's your question, please?
Yes, I wanted Patrick's opinion about a strategy for dealing with conflict. And here's what I would suggest. Kind of a general thought process is that through the spark of differing opinions, through the clash of differing opinions comes a spark of truth. And a way that I've dealt with in consultation with others, when we have differences, it could be personal issues between two people. It could be, social issues in the Catholic, un-Catholic, in the Catholic Church, where people differ in their opinions about things. And the steps I would say, and I'd like your feedback on this and your thoughts, and then I'll hang up once I share these. Number one, is first identify what are the spiritual principles that various people feel are related to whatever this issue might be. Number two, agree that those are relevant principles that could be taken from Scripture, they could be taken from the Magisterium, they could be taken from personal experience. And number three, consult about those after you've agreed on them, and then begin to deal with what the real truth is, whatever that matter might be. And the reason I say this is that if you identify spiritual principles and can agree on them, you've kind of taken the ego out of the picture, and now you have the essence of what are the issues that relate. Maybe you're talking about how to deal with the poor and how we deal with the poor in our community, for example.
Okay, John, let's let Pat take a shot at that.
That was great, John. I mean, there's a lot of wisdom in what you said, and so I'll just add some things to that. I think that's when we talk about building trust before we engage in conflict, it's about getting people to be vulnerable enough. And if you're a true Christian and a follower of Jesus, you can't be anything but. This is what humility is. It's like, I am not God, and I just want to serve God, and we have that in common. So if you do that, and if you start with prayer, like, When a church goes to have a difficult conversation about something going on in their parish, or if two people, priests or otherwise, want to have a good theological conversation because they're not on the same page, goodness gracious, if two bishops sat down and said, I think you might be off on this, if they prayed hard and said, God, send us your spirit and your truth and take away our egos and let us do what you want, and they're both eagerly seeking that, Well, you got to figure that most of the unhealthy conflict is going to go away. And I think two things that I would say to people is, one, think about St. Francis of Assisi, who said, seek to understand more than to be understood. And we're called to do that. And if we go into these situations seeking to understand where the other person is coming from rather than trying to win the argument, we're much more likely to do that. And then one of my favorite prayers is the Litany of Humility that was written by a pope years ago. I wish I could remember which one, but which is just asking God to give you to let go of the desire to be considered and understood and to overcome your fear of being – it's just to be truly humble. And if two people can sit down and agree that they're here to serve Jesus, they pray together, humility is at the center of this, and they want to understand one another, what conflict is only going to become the pursuit of the best answer and truth. The problem is when we engage in that without trust, without humility, without prayer, and without seeking to understand. So I think what I'm saying to you, John, is your thoughts are great, and I think it's completely, completely about our faith, and that's why churches should be better at making decisions than anybody, because they should be calling on God to intervene for them every single time. So you're right, John. That's my short, long answer way of saying you're right.
Thanks, John. Thanks very much. We go now to Maria in Washington, D.C., listening on Guadalupe Radio there in Washington, D.C. Maria, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. What's your question?
My question is kind of the opposite take on what you just discussed. If I'm in a board meeting in a Christian nonprofit and someone says, we're trying to work out a problem or a project, and someone says, well, I was in prayer today and God told me to do such and such. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, this is an interesting one. I mean, and a board meeting is an interesting thing because it's like, how well do you know this person and how much do you trust them inherently? Because if my wife comes to me and tells me that, man, I'm listening. Okay. But if somebody I don't know very well says that, I'm like, are you using this to try to win this argument? And so while I would never write that off because God speaks through people, I think that's where we're talking about conflict among people with great levels of trust. And there are people that say those things, and though I can't know their hearts, I know that some people sometimes use that as a way to kind of take things off the table. Like, well, God told me that you're an idiot and I should be in charge, so there it is.
Is that the impression you get, Maria?
No, that's exactly right. When it comes from somebody I trust already, I take it to heart. And when it's somebody I don't trust, I think they're trying to use it to manipulate the situation.
And that's why we need to build trust before we engage in conflict. I don't think people that don't know each other go, let's engage in conflict. I say, no. First establish trust. And as you said, Cy, that's we have something in common. We want to please God. We have a common faith. Let's draw upon that and then go there. But if a person uses that without trust and without knowing a person, it feels pretty manipulative.
Thanks, Maria. Thanks very much for that. Pat, I asked you about where we might be coming up short in leadership in the Christian community. I didn't ask you about maybe you could name a gift that we have or something we're really good at in the Christian community.
Well, we have a huge advantage, which is we are trying to please God and it's not about us. So we have a built-in inherent understanding that there is no other way to do this other than humility. The problem is we don't draw on that enough. And one of the things when we work with Catholic parishes and in any church-based organization is what they need to do more, and this is going to sound so obvious, they need to pray more. And what I mean by that is, of course we pray at church, but are we praying before key decisions? Are we praying when we have difficult conversations to have? Are we praying when we have to deal with a personnel issue? God, please help us know if we should cut this person loose for their own good and the good of the parish, or should we hold on? Let's go to holy hour. Let's pray a rosary. Let's get down on our knees in silent prayer and ask God's intercession. Churches, Christian organizations have the greatest strategic advantage of anyone. And dare I say, we too often don't leverage that because we think, well, prayer is what we do at Mass and in church, but when we're running the organization, it's all about management. I'm a big believer in management, but you pray and you turn to God and He does things that good management could never do.
Patrick Lencioni is our guest, a worldwide recognized expert in leadership and organizational development. 888-318-7884 is our number. Do you have questions about leadership in the church? We're happy to take those questions. We'll get more of them when we come back right after this.
Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
We hear it every year. The perennial question. What are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Have you considered helping a friend or family member as they journey into the Catholic Church? It's called Friendship Evangelization. And so you don't have to go it alone. Author Devin Rose has written Navigating the Tiber, How to Help Your Friends and Family Journey Toward the Catholic Faith. Not only does he equip you with the knowledge from Scripture, the early church, and Christian history, he shows you how to deal with the common aspects of a convert's journey. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Navigating the Tiber today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, first Friday of Lent. Happy to have you with us here. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our topic this hour is leadership in the church, and our guest is the really remarkable Patrick Lencioni. We're very happy and privileged to have him here with us, probably most famous for his book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, but he's got a whole bunch of books, among them, The Better Pastor, one of your newer books. Is that right?
That's right.
And, you know, I want to ask you before we go, because we've got the calls and I want to get to them, but I have a question for you that actually was posed to me. And a lot of people are feeling conflict at the parish level right now. This was posed by someone who I know works at a parish. And there's maybe political agendas, people who say, I hate this political leader, or maybe it's the president in some cases, you know, and that there's a kind of way in which agendas other than the sharing the good news get into our institutions sometimes. What do we do when we're confronted with agendas that are not actually the mission of the church?
Right. Oh, and this happens, and it's the devil loves this, by the way. He loves the you know, Diablo, the word is rooted in dividing people. And that's what the devil wants. And so the first thing we have to do is pray about it and say, God, take away any hint of pride or envy or bitterness I have in me. But then I think what we have to do is sit down with people and instead of just avoiding it, say, hey, you know something? I notice that you like the president. And I tend not to. And maybe I'm missing something. Tell me something that you see that you feel that way. And if we're really doing as St. Francis said and seeking to understand, then both people are going to go into that conversation open to being influenced. But the problem is we don't do that. And oftentimes it's because of pride, the root of all sin. And we think, I just want to convince them. I want to judge them. I want to win. But I think if we just went and said, you know, I realize we disagree, but you're a good person. And so help me understand where you're coming from. I was with a guy the other night and we were talking about a former president. And it wasn't Obama, and it wasn't certainly wasn't Trump, because he's not the former president. And I asked the guy, and he was expressing admiration for a president who I have struggled with. And I finally just said to him, and I didn't know him that way, I just said, tell me how you handled this part of that president. And this guy said, oh, gosh, it drove me crazy, and I was really struggled with that. And as it turned out, we agreed on something. And I said, okay, so you struggled with that too. And he said, oh, yes. So then I thought, oh, okay. So we have common ground, and now I can understand why you admired that, but we don't do that enough. We just say, I hate him. Well, I like him.
Yeah, right.
And then we say, but that's not Christian. Well, I am Christian. And let's actually try to understand one another, but to do that, we have to put God first, because we are not Republicans and Democrats. We are not even Americans first. We are followers of Jesus.
Amen.
And my Catholicism is far more important to me than my citizenship, my political party, my favorite football team.
Even your favorite football team?
Barely.
I don't believe you. We go now to Rosa in Lowell, Massachusetts, listening on the Station of the Cross. Rosa, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. What's your question?
First of all, I wanted to say thank you to Patrick. I listened to a conference of his once, and he said, I am Catholic. And at the same time, I was shocked, and at the same time, I was ecstatic, because I had never seen anyone in a Christmas conference talk like that. So thank you so much, Patrick. My question is, how do people take that from you when you say that, when you come out of the conference? Do people say anything to you?
Yes. In fact, thank you very much, Rosa. They almost always do. And usually they come to me and they say, thank you for doing that. I've had people say, I'm not a Catholic and I appreciate that you do that. I have people say that I used to be and I really like that you do that. And a lot of Catholics come and say, thank you for doing that. More often than not, because we all feel afraid to do that, when somebody does that publicly, it gives people hope and courage to do it themselves. You know, I started doing a lot of speaking at evangelical churches, at leadership conferences. And I always decided that I would come out and I would announce that I was Catholic. And I will tell you a story. I once actually was there's a mega church that asked me to be their preacher. Now, that's not something I can do in a Catholic church because I'm not a priest. And I called a priest and I said, am I allowed to preach at a Protestant church? And they said, yeah, absolutely. And so I went there and I got up. There might have been 5,000 people in the congregation. And the minister introduced me by saying, Pat's a Catholic, and you'll never guess it. He actually went to church before he came here, and that's the first time anybody's ever done that. Now, these were Protestants. They broke out into applause.
Oh.
Because they knew I was Catholic and I'd gone to Mass. And so I think we Catholics and Christians that are not Catholic have to, you know, they say go out and preach the gospel and occasionally use words. It didn't say never use words. Just declaring, yes, I'm happy being a Catholic and I'm proud of that. And now let me be a good consultant or a good marketer or whatever else. I don't think that there's anything wrong with saying that, especially today when people are afraid. And so, yeah, I will tell you, Maria, only a few times have I gotten punished for it, and it was not very hard to be punished for it. I've never had it be what I thought. I will tell you, I did have a company tell me not to mention God in one of my talks. And they said, you can't come here if you mention God. And I said, well, here's the deal. I'm a Christian and a Catholic. I'm not there to proselytize, but I can't promise. I am who I am. And they said, okay, that's okay. And in my talk, I said, well, I don't think God made us to hate our jobs, because I was talking about that. And at the end, I said, God bless you. They never complained. And employees from the company came up and said, thank you for witnessing. We don't do that here.
Wow.
So Rosa, I think we can do it more. And you know what Jesus said in the Beatitudes, and when they do persecute us for it, let's rejoice, because our reward will be great in heaven. Now, it's not always easy for me, but I've always found it to be not as bad as I thought.
Thanks, Rosa.
Thank you.
God bless you, Rosa.
It's something I wonder if sometimes we handicap ourselves in the public sphere because our fears are worse than maybe the reality is.
Absolutely. And that's, again, where if we humble ourselves and pray to God for courage and do it out of love, it's easy to do it out of like spite, like I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't – that's not what we can do. But if we can humbly go forward and say, this is what I believe and this is who I am, I find that people really respond well.
Right. Well, you mentioned a couple times, you know, maybe there's a situation where you may have to say to someone in parish ministry, for example, or maybe it could be an apostolate like Catholic Answers or something. Actually, maybe I'm going to get this conversation soon where you say it's probably best for you and for the parish or the apostolate for you to move on. But so that brings me to the question on the other side of it. How do I get people into my parish, into my ministry, into my apostolate, who are the kind of leaders that I want there?
Well, I think first of all, you have to clarify what it is that makes somebody a good leader in your organization. And the hard thing is in a parish, and this gets to core values. Okay, so what are the core values of a Catholic parish? Well, first of all, permission to play values are Jesus value, that we love Jesus and love the church. But that's not enough in life. But we have to also say, but what's special about our parish that would make somebody a good fit here?
Yeah.
And you might interview somebody in your parish and go, this person's a wonderful person. They love Jesus and they love the church. But you know something? Our parish is kind of like this. I think they would actually be better at this parish down the street that has a different charism or a different culture.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay. You're not rejecting them. You're helping them find a better place. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's going to be some Catholic parishes that are very innovative, growth-oriented, and it's very ambiguous, and things are changing all the time. And there's going to be another one that's much more controlled and predictable and easy to manage. Well, the same person isn't going to thrive in both parishes as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what you have to do is first clarify what kind of person really thrives here. And then when you go interview or when you review your employees, you sit down and talk to them and say, these are our values. How do you think you match up to those? And usually the person will say, yeah, this isn't a good fit for me. And you go, okay, I'm going to love you into another job. Let's help you find a place that where you will be successful and you will thrive the way God intended you to. It's not a buy-sell decision where you go, oh, there's Fred. Should we hire him or fire him? It's like, let's talk to Fred and find out what he thinks first. So I think we have to love people in accountability, and sometimes they're not going to like the answer, and sometimes they just can't sing and they're leading the choir. But most times they're going to work with you and say, you know, let me find a job where I can thrive.
Wow. All right. We go to Joseph in Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on 89.1 FM Catholic Radio Indy. Joseph, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. What's your question?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
So I have a very specific situation going on in my diocese. I attended an event at a parish that was sponsored by an organization called IndyCan, which is part of the PICO National Network. And I was a little put off by the message at the meeting. So I looked into it and I found out that PICO has financial ties to Planned Parenthood and other organizations that like campaign for women priesthood or gay marriage. So I was concerned that this was something that was part of my diocese. I tried to contact the leadership. We don't have a bishop right now. We have an archdiocesan administrator because Bishop Tobin was elevated to cardinal recently. So I tried to contact them to have a meeting to discuss this situation, and I wanted to know why we were associated with this group, and you know, if we should be into the future. And I originally had a meeting, but they canceled it right the day before I was supposed to be there. And then I had a day that I went there just, and I said I can wait until there's time. I'll be here, and you know, whenever you can slip me into the schedule. Well, they threatened police action to remove me from the building.
Well, Joseph, it is a diocese in transition, obviously. I don't know what the situation is there, but there may not be people who can answer your question until a bishop is there. But so I need you to get to what's your specific question for Patrick?
Yeah. My question is, how is it that I should move forward approaching people who seem to not want to be approached?
Okay, So I think this is a great question, Joseph. First of all, recognize that maybe you're called to suffer for this because it sounds like you're right that this is probably inappropriate. I mean, I don't know the details. I don't know these organizations. But if indeed they have ties and it's real, that doesn't sound like a Catholic thing. But I don't know. But maybe you're called to suffer for this. So first pray for the church and pray for humility and suffer through this. And then I think I like subsidiarity. I like going to the local place. Like if it was at a parish, I might go to the pastor and say, Father, I'm not accusing you of anything. I know, and I don't want to sound like I'm condescending or anything like that. I'm just concerned about this. And I'm wondering if you're aware of this. And if the priest goes, no, actually, I didn't know about that, then it's probably best if he handles that. But let's say the pastor goes, yeah, I don't have a problem with that and all that. Then I think out of love, you got to go, well, Father, I love you. You're my pastor, but I think that's a problem. I think it could be, you know, express yourself and know that you might be called to suffer there too. And then if you have to go to the diocese and do what you did your duty. It's a diocesan transition. Pray for them. And sometimes you just got to go suffer. And I say that because I'm Italian and Irish, and I get mad really easy. And I know that's never what God is calling me to do. There is righteous indignation, but there's not that much that we should be that way. And sometimes I have to just go, wow, my heart is breaking that people are doing things that are leading people astray. And I have to do everything I can within my power, but some things are not in my power. And so I think that's kind of, I think, again, commit it to prayer, go to adoration and ask God what he wants you to do and seek that. And remember, what your ultimate goal is to find peace, because when your peace is gone, you're never going to be able to act that way. So I don't have any wisdom for you around that other than I appreciate your heart and I love that you love the church, but just don't ever let the devil take away your peace.
Thanks, Joseph, very much. I hope that is helpful. Patrick Lencioni is our guest this hour. We got a whole another segment. We got more calls coming up on leadership in the church. This is Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We'll be right back.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I have exciting news. Starting this spring, Catholic Answers will begin airing its first ever television program. It'll be appearing on EWTN, and you'll also be able to watch it, no matter where you are, from Catholic.com using your smart TV, tablet, or other device. Catholic Answers' mission is to use every means we can to reach people with the message of Christ and His Church. But until now, television has been beyond our reach. That's about to change, and that's why we need your help right now. Producing a quality, professional television show like this is not cheap, and it can only happen with the generous support of donors like you. To make your donation, visit Catholic.com and click the Catholic Answers television banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Catholic Answers television banner at Catholic.com or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Widely regarded as the premier magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization, our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine features the articles you want by the authors you know and respect. Year after year, Catholic Answers magazine has been bringing the very best teachers the Catholic world has to offer into thousands of homes on a regular basis. Top-notch writers like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Mark Brumley, Tim Staples, Carlo Brissard, and Matt Nelson. The list goes on and on. It makes a perfect gift for family and friends, students, priests, and seminarians. Just about anybody you know. And of course, don't forget about a subscription for yourself. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com to subscribe today. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Leadership in the church is our topic this hour. We got a bunch of calls, and Patrick Lencioni is our guest. And so I want to get to as many as I can, Pat. So I'm just going to work my way through them as quick as I can. Anonymous in Columbus, Ohio, listening on 820 AM. Anonymous, you are on with Patrick Lencioni.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi there. Beautiful name, by the way.
Question.
That's a beautiful name.
Thanks. I'm a Catholic school teacher who's kind of at the bottom of the totem pole as far as, like, hierarchy goes in her school. I'm one of the newer ones. And I've noticed in the past couple of years working there that while we have many gifts, I'm seeing the spirituality of our school kind of die. There's not a lot of joy in the gospel, and I'm watching that happen with our teachers and their spirituality and it looks like the leadership is getting really worried about money, so the focus is more on tuition than on the individual child. And I've been praying on that and feeling really unrestful about it. And I'm trying to figure out how to bring some of those concerns up to my principal and to our pastor without sounding like I'm telling them they're not doing a good job. Like how to maybe shed a light on something we have a need for that I'd like to help with without putting them on the defensive or making them think that I'm accusing them of not doing a good job at their job.
That's a beautiful desire, and I do have some advice about that. I'm a big believer in managing upward, and I think the issue is humility and the kind truth. And much of my career was predicated on me being the guy. People used to shove me into the CEO's office and say, "You tell him." And I'd be like, you work for him. I don't work for him. Yeah, but he listens to you. And I think it's because I learned how to tell them what they needed to hear in a way that was kind and didn't threaten them, because I honored them and I said, you have a hard job. I couldn't do this job. I know how hard it is, and I don't want you to think I'm condescending. In other words, exactly what you just said, Anonymous, and go to them and say, the last thing I would ever want to do is seem like I was trying to tell you how to do your job. But I feel like if we really recommitted to the spiritual joy of the gospel in the school, it would really help. And I would love to help you in any way. And I will put myself at your disposal to do that. I have some ideas, but I'm open to your ideas too. But this is really important to me. And just so you know, I'm going to pray for you and for the school all the time. The other thing, so I would say, go do that. Let me tell you something. One time out of 100, somebody's going to get fired for doing that. 50 times out of 100, they're going to ignore it. 40 times, they're going to go, "That's so wonderful, let me help you." There's no real cost to doing this. If they ignore it, you've done your very best. And just keep praying, because God can make things happen. But I mean, almost half the time probably, that's my guess, is they're going to go, "Wow, this is great. That's disarming the way you've asked us. What are your ideas?" But go in there with that kind of attitude. And here's the other thing I would say, is call my friends in Los Angeles, the Carmelite Sisters of Alhambra, and ask them to pray for you. These women are the dearest human beings, so close to Jesus, and they will pray for you. And if you can get religious communities praying for you, God will open up doors. I think sometimes God is just like, "Why aren't you people asking me to help you? I will help you." So it sounds like you're already there. It sounds like you're doing the right things. And just be really vulnerable and anticipate their objections. Just say, "I know I'm young. I know I'm not at the top of the hierarchy. And I know I don't want to make you think I'm criticizing you. I'm here to help you." And they will probably love you for that.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Sure. God bless you.
Thank you, Anonymous. And for those of you who are watching us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope, thanks for being with us there today. If you want to catch the video of this hour with Patrick Lencioni, you can always go back and find it on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, or Periscope. You can do that too, right? I think so. Yeah. We go now to Michael in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Michael, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. What's your question?
Yes, my question is... we have a few foster kiddos in our home, and right now we explained to them a little bit about the season of Lent. But we're trying to figure out how to explain a little more of the Catholic traditions, like such as Stations of the Cross tonight, and a couple of the reasons why we do things in Lent, since they really not practicing Catholics, and they're not Catholics themselves. How it's the best way to probably go approach this, especially they're like younger kids. Let's say below 14 years old.
So they're like younger than 14, but like, and what's their age group generally?
Probably like preteen and elementary kid.
Okay, great. I have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old and 2 18-year-olds, and so all boys, by the way, too. So I'm not an expert at this. But the main thing is to pray for them. I mean, honestly, the main thing is to pray for them. God open their hearts, and I would just say, tell them what you love about it. Let them say, here's why I love this, and tell them about how you learned about it, I would think, and then ask them if they have any questions. And then, you know, I say that because kids that age, sometimes they're just hearing things and soaking things up. And in a perfect world, we want them to go, "Gee, Dad, thanks. That was awesome." And they're probably not going to, but expose them to it, explain it to them in terms of what's going on, why you love it. ask them if they have any questions, and let them know that if they ever have any questions, and it might be 2 years from now, it might be 2 months from now, it might be the day before Easter, but you can't control it. I wish I could, because God knows I've tried to in my own children, and I can't.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks very much. Mark.
I hope that's helpful.
Mark in West Palm Beach, Florida, listening on EWTN. Mark, you are on with Patrick Lencioni. Your question, please.
Good. Hey, guys. Patrick, good day. You might remember we went to Mass in West Palm Beach Ash Wednesday a few years ago together.
I remember that. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So here's my question. The evangelicals are really structured around leadership programs and leadership courses, and I think it fits them well because, you know, their churches are, you know, big businesses that everybody gets a job in. Whereas we Catholics, you know, have celibate priests who lead us in the parishes and don't really have sort of local business structures that invite themselves to lots of jobs. And so people don't really have lots of opportunities to learn leadership. So when you think about our local priests and local parishes, what's ways that we help to teach people leadership skills?
Wow, I've just remembered, I just realized I haven't explained something yet. One of the things I do, one of the primary things I do is a gentleman named John Martin and I from Colorado and a group of other people and from other apostolates and staff started something about 4 years ago called the Amazing Parish Movement. And we have a website, amazingparish.org. We have this book, The Better Pastor. We put on conferences. We have one coming up in Atlanta. We will have taken about 1,000 of the country's 15,000 parishes through this training. We have taken it upon ourselves to work with dioceses all over and a lot of apostolates and like Focus and Chris Stefanik and Jeff Cavins and all these other groups to train pastors and their teams in how to be better leaders. So that's a big focus of mine in life because God made me a leadership person, is we're teaching pastors and their teams how to do this better. And so it's amazingparish.org, and it's all free. I mean, all the resources on there, the conference is not very expensive. We're just trying to give things to help the church that way. Now, the thing about these evangelical churches is that it's a little different because, one, they don't have the sacraments. And so as a result of that, people can come and go. The other thing is they're more like startups. They have to be competitive. And so they have a built-in structural advantage in terms of that they're desiring to do this. I wish we had that too, only in the sense that we don't want to take it for granted that, well, people are going to come here because this is the only place they can get the sacraments. While there's nothing more important than the sacraments and communion, the Eucharist, the source and summit of our faith, sometimes I think we need to appeal to people in terms of the other things we do in our ministries more too. And we have some wonderful Catholic churches that do just that. So, so you've hit the nail on the head, and we are trying to address that. And maybe that's why God put me on the earth, is to help spearhead a movement to teach pastors and their staff members how to be better leaders.
Does that help you, Mark?
It does. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Amazing. Amazingparish.org. How long have you been doing that, Patrick?
4 years. And I went to a Focus conference, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students, and it blew me away. And I said, I have to do something different. I met this man, John Martin, through Curtis Martin. And since then, I spent about half my time doing that.
Well, thanks very much for being with us today, Patrick Lencioni on Catholic Answers Live. It's really a wonderful hour. Great time spent with you. Thank you.
It's my total pleasure. God bless you.
Amazingparish.org is where you can find out more about Patrick and his work for the Catholic Church now, a leader who has honed his skills in the secular world and now shares them with us in the Catholic world about how we can be better leaders and better organizations. Next hour, we're talking prayer. You got questions on prayer? You want to rejuvenate that prayer life? Well, we got some help on the way to help rejuvenate that prayer life. This is Catholic Answers Live. I'll give you that number, 888-318-7884, in case you got a prayer question. Get on the line and ask it. We'll be right back.